She read.
Yep.
We're going to open our committee hearing today on the Senate Rural Communities and Economic Development Committee, and we have a lot of esteemed people here today. So we're going to start by opening a public hearing on HCR 203. And with that, we'll have a short explanation. We'll have our senator and representative come on up to the dais while we hear a short explanation.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, HCR 203 recognizes Hunt Memorial Park as the home of the Wasco County Fair since 1914.
Whoever wants to go first.
Well, I will kick it off. You know, I understand that there may be at least one person at the dais that maybe does not look fondly necessarily on resolutions and stuff. I would just suggest that... personally, this is my first ever. And Mr. Chair, I would suggest that February is the perfect time to deal with memorials and resolutions and stuff like this. And of course, I have lived in Wasco County 30 years and represent it today. And our senator here, who also represents Wasco County, is going to give you as many details about the Wasco County Fair as possible. I'm not planning on reading the resolution. I thought we would save that to the Senate floor, as I did on the House floor. But it is interesting. There are some great little tidbits of history. Mr. Hunt actually donated the property that the fair is on today, and he died right after he decided to donate the property. His wife and daughter actually stuck with the agreement and said, no, that's what Dad wanted to do, and so they left it that way. So a neat history that you can read at your leisure. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for allowing us to come and talk about the House Concurrent Resolution 203. If you look back in Wasco County history, it was one of the few counties that there were in the Oregon Territory. Wasco at one point in time encompassed about 8 or 9 of the counties and part of Idaho and part of Washington State. So it was originally known as Wascoan County. And history goes back, as I said, 150 years. The first fair in Wasco County was held in 1869. And obviously, just 10 years after statehood, they had awards for potatoes and apples and pears and corn and cabbage and peas. Horse racing was a hot topic. And then, even then, they had emphasis on the 4-H exhibits at the Wasco County Fair. If you have never been through the Ty Valley, which became the home of the Wasco County Fair in 1912, I urge you to head back north up through the Hood River country and look at the Ty Valley. It's just remarkable. Beautiful agricultural area, very fertile farm ground, and surrounded by beautiful rolling wheat country. The fairgrounds were developed. Eventually, the old fairgrounds they ran out of money. This is when William Hunt stepped up. He assumed the mortgage himself personally and paid the back taxes so that the fair could continue. Eventually, Mr. Hunt did donate that land to the county for the 4-H and FFA and the fair. His dedication has translated into a strong tradition of FFA and 4-H activities at the fair. Mr. Hunt paid for many of the operations of the fair out of his own pocket for years. As the representative said, eventually donated the property to the county, and to this day it's a memorial to not only the 4-H and FFA members and the young folks there in Wasco County, but to the Hunt family, who reaffirmed the donation to the county. The property is named Hunt Memorial Park, appropriately enough. And this resolution honors his gift, his commitment to the county fair, and will act as a promotion and an invitation to all Oregonians to go to Ty Valley during fair time and visit something that's got a tradition and a history that goes back to 1869.
Thank you. Any questions for this panel? I don't think we had anybody else signed up to speak, So I thank you both for being here.
Thank you very much.
And we're going to close our public hearing on HCR 203. Might as well open up a work session on HCR 203. And Senator Boettcher.
Chair Roblin, I move HCR 203 to the floor with B adopted recommendations.
Senator Boettcher moves HCR 203 to the floor with a B adopted recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing none. Is there any opposition? Seeing none. It is adopted. And I think, do you think Senator would like to carry this bill?
I told him he was.
Okay. We will assign this to
Senator
Perioli. And we'll close our work session on HCR 203. And we're going to open a public hearing on HB 4128. And I see Representative Clem, so he can count them up, and we'll have Beth give a short explanation, if there's a way to give a short explanation.
We'll try. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 4128 establishes that cities that require an election on questions of annexation by the city charter, ordinance, or resolution must approve the annexation by a majority of voters in the city as well as a separate majority of voters in the territory to be annexed if the area is 100 acres or more. There is no revenue impact and a minimal fiscal impact.
With that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Brian Clem, state representative from District 21 here in Salem. I'm also chair of, we've followed your lead, and we're now the House Rural Communities Committee. We don't have all of the
year. Words,
yeah, okay. I'm trying, but we went from land use to House Rural Communities a few months ago. I'm pleased to be here. This is actually not just appearing as the committee chairperson, which I may do if, at your pleasure on other bills that came from us, but this is my bill, too, so that's why I happen to be here. So I will just give you a brief annexation, Island Annexation 101. Prior to probably say 2005, island annexations by cities were not really that highly debated. In 2005 session, there was legislation passed to exempt very, 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 very large employers from annexation by island using artificial roads to go out and surround the Nike campus. This resulted in lots of sort of, I would say, discussions about what about everybody else who gets island annexed using roads and why just Nike getting protected. I think it was technically Nike and one other company fit the definitions. So in 2007, myself and a whole host of colleagues, I think, Mr. Chair, you were the chair of the committee that with Senator Boquist and Representative Senator Edwards now and myself working on some reforms to the island annexation law. We changed the law through both House and Senate and signed into law in 2007 to limit the use of roads to create islands to more incidentally if they happen to occur, but not intentionally trying to draw islands. The reason this is relevant is because this is the one method where the people involved in the homes to be annexed didn't get to vote at all on whether they were annexed. Either the city council would annex them or the voters of a city would annex them. They didn't vote at all. In 2009, we changed the law to allow the people in the island to vote in areas where they do vote on this, and there's not that many around the state, only 36, I think. In those areas where people vote, the island is counted in with everybody else. And I felt like that was actually pretty fair because the whole theory behind island annexation and why you wouldn't allow them to veto it is sometimes the city grows in such a way that a house or two gets stranded in the middle of the city, and then the sheriff and others have to drive all the way to that place going through the city to this one stranded island. That was the purpose. Because it's the one remaining tool where the people don't really have a full voice. They used to have no voice. Now they don't have a full voice. I kind of felt like we had gotten to a decent place with the exception of times when this is used in lieu of other ways to annex because the cities, I felt, certain cities just didn't like having to earn the support of the people on the island. So the goal was to try and find a balance between the need to be able to island annex in some cases, whether the people liked it or not, and what limit is there that you wouldn't use it to do entire city sizes full of people? This came about because my mayor came to the 2005 session and urged the legislature not to adopt anything like this because they were planning to encircle areas in the eastern edge of just outside of Salem that are about 5,000 to 10,000 people, two pockets of 5,000. So these are large, large areas already developed, and Salem was looking at using roads to surround them. And she talked about that in front of the Senate committee that Senator Ringo at the time chaired. My city has since stopped doing that, stopped pursuing that, felt like that wasn't right. They can't afford it anyway. So they're no longer aggressively doing it. But I still got interested when there's no live ones going on, which is a better time to make law, in this concept of what about an upper limit on island annexation so we're not calling things islands that aren't really islands. And when they're other methods of annexation to be used, like the annexation plan method, the health and safety, the triple majority, those are all still untouched. This bill only applies to annexations that are the island method. It also only applies to island annexations that are in cities where everyone is voting on annexation. So now we're down to 30-plus cities. This says that if it's 100 acres or smaller, you still use the single majority where the island will get rolled in with everybody else, it'll be counted, and the winner wins. If they're over 100 acres, then the island must pass in the island and it must pass in the city for it to be approved. So then you need to really sell the island or use another method. For example, if a developer owns a 200-acre piece like they did on the east part of Salem, they want it annexed. It was a non-island annexation because it was an owner requested what we'd call triple majority, where they sign up and say, I want to be annexed. So the city used that method. If there were large areas with health and safety problems, failing septic systems, groundwater contamination, cities can, whether they like it or not, do health and safety annexations for emergencies. So this is really just targeting the island annexations only and in places where the cities all vote. Is it fair to have the rest of the cities outvoting these large affected people or not? I argue that this, I borrowed this from the Washington number. This is Washington's limit on the size of islands, that this is a fair amount. My earlier bill said 20 acres. That probably was happy for my constituents, but maybe not a good amount. I felt like this was the right amount. As you'll hear, the League of Oregon Cities, probably we've talked about this, they're not going to support any limits on acreages. So I just picked a number I thought was reasonable, not knowing how to get a number from my partner cities in the land use world. And that's where it came from. It passed the House quite overwhelmingly and would answer any questions and encourage your support if possible.
Any questions? Yes. Senator Brzezinski.
So, Brian, you talked briefly about the 100 acres. So can you give us a little bit more history on that as to what Washington State and how they reached that number?
Hey, I don't actually know. I just know that's their number, but I don't know. I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, Senator Brzezinski, I do not know where that number was arrived from there. I didn't look into it. I can tell you that having visited lots of people, most people, of course, want it down to about 1 acre, but that's probably not reasonable either. True islands, I think, in the theory of annexation law and urban growth boundaries and land use, probably we were thinking 5-10 acre chunks here and there that end up getting drawn in. I mean, I think Maywood Park is probably an island at some level that exists. I think 100 is a pretty good size chunk of land and quite a lot of people. So it's not the one grumpy old guy who doesn't want to go into the city that's holding everybody up. It'd be a pretty large amount of people involved.
Follow up. I guess I'm not following that as to 100 acres. Why would that necessarily mean that there's a lot more people?
Yeah, that's a good question. Senator Robin, Senator Brzezinski, generally speaking, if it's a large piece of undeveloped land, the person who owns it would actually request annexation and want it so they can develop it and get all the infrastructure. It's typically you'll find these developed neighborhoods where people already live there and already have their own wells and septic systems. Those are the ones who usually object to being brought into the city because they already have services that they arranged for themselves, and they do not provide, in their mind, the city benefits don't outweigh the new property taxes. So the other kinds of big annexations that would be large acreages, I think, are typically going to be voluntary, and they wouldn't use the island method. The island method is where the city's bringing people in who don't really want to be in, and I think you can hear testimony from the cities on this question. Maybe they feel differently, but generally speaking, it's called a triple majority annexation. When somebody wants to bring in a big development, they won't use island. They'll use triple majority because they are the owner, they've got all the votes, and they've got all the acreage, and so it'll pass quite easily in that scenario.
Last follow-up.
Yep, please.
I guess I've not followed the annexation formulas or different opportunities. So how many are there?
Different methods. I believe there's 13 at least. Aaron might know. Yeah, there was a report done by Linda Ludwig, who was Aaron's predecessor prior, and if it's somewhere between 13 plus. It's definitely not less than 13. Somewhere between 13 to 17 methods. So, for example, Bend, when they did theirs, used a thing called the annexation plan method, which is where they said, we're going to annex everybody inside the UGB, and they put it on the ballot, and it eventually became law.
If I may, I mean, it just seems to me what I'm hearing is there's a lot of different solutions we put on the table or into the books to fit a particular situation as compared to having some uniformity as to how these are going to work, and instead of having to pick or choose with different criteria for different models. It seems like it would be an opportunity to actually see if we couldn't get something that would be much more consistent around the state and not having a boutique type of annexation.
A number of us have talked about that and thought that maybe the Judiciary Committee would like to take that.
Well,
we can talk, though. I agree.
We can do that.
Senator Rosen,
49, and that was okay.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly right.
Senator Prezansky.
A lot of those problems were caused because of weird annexation stuff, I think, too.
In fairness to the cities, my mayor at the time that I was mentioning, I mean, what they said was, you've changed the law on almost every other method to double majority to where they just can't pass. So this is the last one we have left that doesn't require the consent of the property owner. I mean, that's what my mayor came down here and said was. So that's why we're using it. I didn't agree with her that was an acceptable reason to use the island method versus, say, trying to go back and change the plan method to get to single majorities or something like that. But I think it was the only one that worked for them until you got all the way to a health and safety sort of situation, or it was voluntary on behalf of the person to be annexed. But if you really wanted to capture an area for taxation that you as a mayor believe is receiving city services, this was the only way to really do it, whether they liked it or not. And I can't go there personally, but I'm not sure it's totally unfair to say the other methods are unlikely to be successful unless they're voluntary by the property owner. Until you get all the way to the point where everything's failing, and then they'll do it by health and safety. I'm not sure that's an unfair characterization.
Yeah. So along that same line, do you think it would be reasonable to just say we have this unique thing called an urban growth boundary, and it's supposed to be, 20 years of buildable for a city, that when a city initially sets up an urban growth boundary, we just say, at the end of 20 years, any part of this that is not annexed in the city becomes part of the city?
Well, thank
then
you.
We wouldn't have thank to have a vote or anything.
We wouldn't have to vote on this. So, Mr. Chair, I would say if we had had land use planning and urban growth boundaries prior to the advent of these communities that formed pre-land use planning, it actually would be completely fair. These are neighborhoods like Janray neighborhood of Salem has been there long before Senate Bill 100. So now that they're there, the question is, are they unfairly getting city services? And if they are going to get city services of some kind, could they potentially live with a forced annexation, let's call it that? Most of these neighborhoods, when I consulted with my city said, we can't afford to give them the services. So no, they're not going to get sidewalks. No, they're not going to get streetlights. Yes, we are going to raise their taxes roughly 30% to 35%, but we're not going to be able to actually give them services. That's the part that's rough. Because sometimes I feel like myself and the cities talk past each other. I'm talking about pre-existing neighborhoods. They're talking about bare ground land use planning. I agree. Bare ground should be brought in. It's the people who were there before we got into UGBs that are angry that they might get sucked into a city when they already have a well and they already have a septic tank. And cities can already, if you want to hook into their system, they can already use another kind of annexation, non-remonstrance agreements, to say if you want to hook into the city water, you're going to sign up for to agree to be annexed voluntarily. And that's another of those 13 methods that gets at people who are tapping into direct city services. I guess if they wanted to, they could even say, you can't go to our library if you don't sign up to be annexed. In my city, they charge $62 to go to the library if you're not in the city, but they probably could try and make you sign an agreement saying, become a city person, you can use our library. Most of us love reading, so that's a little rough, but...
Okay. Any other questions? Thank you very much. We're going to hold this the work session over until Thursday, but we're going to have a few more questions here. Yeah.
Mr. Chair, is the Damascus bill up any time or not yet?
Not today. Okay. It'll be up on Thursday.
Okay, I know you're hearing about that.
Bring that up.
And I can, if you don't choose to, your business, but if you want, I could come back at the time and sit with the representatives who brought it to you about what our committee listened to, if you have any interest or not.
I would. Thursday, expect that to happen on Thursday.
Okay. Thank you.
Solution?
Sign up early.
We have, Aaron Doyle. That's surprising.
Good afternoon, Chair Roblin, members of the committee. For the record, Aaron Doyle with the League of Oregon Cities. I think some of what I was going to say was pretty well spoken already. But yes, the League opposes this bill. And not because of just the bare ground issues, but because when you do have urbanized areas that are still in the county, but surrounded by the city, which is the definition of an island, those folks are in the city and they have an impact on city services, whether or not the county's paying for the roads. They probably drive into the city. 100 acres is large, but not necessarily everywhere you go. So large islands like this might not be urbanized to the densities that a city would be, but it's still part of our buildable land supply that we have to count when we look at our UGB. And if we can put infill there, that prevents us from needing to expand our UGB, and we can reach those urban levels of density that the UGB system and Senate Bill 100 envisioned for cities. So looking internally for growth opportunity, for redevelopment opportunity, for infill opportunity, I think was what a lot of folks are looking at now as some of the solutions to the loss of the protected farmlands, the forestry lands, all those natural resources lands that are slowly disappearing. I think Senate Bill 100 has done a great job of protecting that, and that's why we have urban growth boundaries and why we should be able to more easily annex in areas that are literally inside the city boundaries. In addition to that, there's an efficiency that's reached when you have cities servicing all of the areas within the city limits. And when you have an area that's 100 acres of county land, county has to provide some of those services, or they have to contract with the city to provide those services. So that's a cost to the counties to reach into an area that could probably more efficiently be served by one service area, either a city or, you know, sometimes our cities contract with or have special districts to provide those services. And if it's all in one area, or if it's all in one oversight of service provider, that makes more sense financially. It also allows the county to use those resources instead of trying to reach into an urban density area into the areas where resources are harder to get out into the community. So if you have a sheriff's department, they're not having to also cover a piece of the urban property or pay the city to cover that urban property. So there's an efficiency that's reached when you don't hinder annexation process by requiring or allowing a group in a large island to essentially veto an annexation decision. for those reasons, for those efficiencies, for looking at what the purpose of Senate Bill 100 is, I think that this is not the direction that annexation policy should be headed. I'm willing and would welcome the opportunity to have a conversation about how our annexation laws do and don't work with the land use system, and I think there are a number of people who would be willing to have that conversation because it is one of the areas where Senate Bill 100 did not reach into, and I think that those seams are starting to stretch at this point. To go back to Senator Brzezinski's question about how many methods we have, I can't count them all, but I would refer you back to on June 18th, 2013, you had the Annexation 101 hearing, and Beery, Elsner, and Hammond, who work as city attorneys, special district attorneys, did a fairly robust memo on annexation methodologies. It's in OLIS back from that hearing, but they have some of those things listed out. So there are a number of ways, and some require an election and some don't. But this is one where the cities who have the charter amendment, those I think it's 36 is what we've counted, but we can't reach into every city code very efficiently. There are 242. But there are a number of cities who would be affected, not just the city of Salem. And I'd be happy to answer any further questions.
242. Do we still count Damascus as one of those?
Chair Roblin, yes, of course we still count Damascus.
Just checking. Just getting frustrated. This week. Just kidding. Sorry about that. Yes.
So the 100 acres, is that number significant in your position or not?
Chair Roblin, Senator Barshiger, once you have an island inside a city, it doesn't really matter the size of it. It's those efficiencies are, whether it's one property of less than an acre to, you know, not that you would see a 500-acre island. That would be some really weird city planning. The size of the island doesn't matter, because especially if you're dealing with a developed 100 acres that's not necessarily developed to the city levels, but it doesn't really matter the size of the island.
Any other questions? Thank you very much, Aaron. Is there anyone else? There's no one else signed up to talk about this bill. So seeing no one else, we're going to close our public hearing on House Bill 4128. And we're going to carry over the work session on House Bill 4128 to Thursday. So we'll close that. Let's see. That pretty much ends the business that we have for today. Is there any questions or thoughts? If we had more, we have a group of bills for Thursday. That will be all the bills that so far have been delivered. We don't expect any more to our committee. So when you look at that list, that's the sum total of all of ours. My feeling, again, is that in some of those, we probably will hear it, but we aren't going to take action on Thursday. We might come back on Tuesday before we take action on a lot of those. Just so people have an idea what we're doing. Okay, and with that, we're going to close our Committee on Rural Communities and Economic Development. And thank you all. And thank you all.